Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Hi, everyone. As you just heard from NPR, news continues to break about the deadly shooting spree at Fort Hood, the Texas Army base where suspected gunman Major Nidal Hassan killed 13 people and wounded 28 yesterday afternoon. While the details are murky and we await another press conference, two storylines seem to be emerging. One has to do with the particular timing of the killing. Hassan was scheduled to be sent to Afghanistan, and many of the fellow soldiers he allegedly killed were awaiting deployment as well. For soldiers and their families, this pre-deployment period can feel like the last moments of safety, a time to say goodbye and be at home before being sent into harm's way. The other storyline, one impossible to ignore, is in regards to Hassan's faith. An American-born Muslim, we are now hearing from some witnesses that Major Hassan shouted Allah Akbar, God is great, during the rampage. Again, that's according to some witnesses. Witnesses can be wrong. But we've been down this slippery slope before, where many find it easy to conflate individual actions with an entire religion. So two communities deeply hurt today, military families and Muslim American families, and will now seek to find some common ground. Joining us are Tom Tarantino, legislative associate at the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. He's an Army captain who returned from Iraq in 2006, where he was awarded the Combat Action Badge and the Bronze Star. And also with us is Haysham El-Maliji, a local Muslim American activist from Staten Island, who's been with us several times before. So Tom and Haysham, welcome both of you to WNYC today, and I'm so sorry under these circumstances.
Thank you for having us, Brian.
And listeners, this is really for you. And in particular, we want to open our phones for members of these two communities, Muslim Americans and military personnel and your families. Tell us how you reacted to the news and what you want to say to the other community affected by this incident or to anyone else. Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, military personnel and your families, Muslim Americans and your families. Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Now, for both of you, what do you make of this comment we got this morning on our website from a listener named TJ? This says, "My thoughts and prayers are with the victims and their families. This man's act has brought shame to my American Muslim community, even though he appears to be a lone wolf, more along the lines of the disturbed Korean man who murdered dozens at Virginia Tech. But he is still a traitor and should be punished with the utmost severity." Haysham, do you want to react to that first?
First, I want to echo the first part of this commenter and let it be very clear that any decent human being, not just Muslim, would really react with this with shock, and our hearts goes out to the families and of the deceased and wounded. The second part is, Brian, there is no connection whatsoever between a person who snapped, just like many others, as you mentioned, in Virginia Tech, in other military incidents, in Columbine, and the faith. I mean, we cannot, every time somebody with a Muslim name, whether practicing or not, do something, the first thing that comes, okay, he did it because he's a Muslim. I mean, we didn't ask if the Columbine shooters were what religion they were, or the Virginia Tech, or other military persons who did crimes. So
it comes up, of course, because there is a war against America, against the West, by some factions, a tiny percent of the Muslim community of the world, but they're doing it in the name of Islam, they say, and that includes 9/11 and Bali and the London train bombings and all of that stuff. So it's not completely irrational that people would ask the question, correct?
No, I fully understand that, but we have to find out what really happened and why. I mean, this person, Mr. Hassan, is a psychiatrist. What put him over the edge? And we keep hearing conflicting reports of the harassment that he was getting and otherwise. So, I mean, I understand, of course, the reaction that might come out from that, but we need not to be speculating much, and I hope that the investigation would be open to the public so we know exactly what happened.
And Tom from Iraq and Afghanistan, Veterans of America, explain to all the non-military folk listening a little bit about what this pre-deployment period is like. Is this a particularly horrible violation, this crime, because it came in the days and weeks just before many of these soldiers were scheduled to travel to Afghanistan?
Yeah, I mean, I think that even if it hadn't happened in pre-deployment, it would still be a horrible violation.
Of course.
I mean, the people in the military depend on each other for their very safety and their lives. And you know, one of the things that the military teaches you from your first day is that once you shave your head and you put on that uniform, you're Army Green. I know my troop alone, we had officers who were Catholic, officers who were atheist, an officer who was a Buddhist. We had one Muslim soldier, multiple Jewish soldiers, Baptist soldiers. I think we even had a Wiccan soldier in my troop as well. And none of that ever mattered because those are your buddies. Those are the people you depend on every day, from everything from getting chow if you're too busy working in the motor pool to saving someone's life out in the field. And so, yeah, anytime this happens among the military, and it has happened very, very rarely in the military, it is an incredible violation, and it's a terrible criminal act.
What's the next step for military families? How tight is the community, and how much does this shake the foundation?
Well, it's going to shake it quite a bit, but one thing that we know about military families is that they are incredibly, incredibly resilient. I mean, you look at the long, multiple deployments and how overall resilient the military community is, not just the soldiers, but the families, the towns surrounding the bases, the communities that are National Guard and Reserve all over this country. People are coming together to support soldiers and servicemen when they come home from Iraq and Afghanistan. And I think that's important. And I think that the Fort Hood community is going to band together, as they have in many, many cases throughout hardships ranging from the mundane to the serious.
And Hisham, basically same question. What kinds of support systems exist within the Muslim community for moments like this?
The unfortunate fact, Brian, since 9/11, Muslims have been on a roller coaster emotionally and sometimes physically for many of the members. With the help of many not-for-profit organizations who provide therapy and programs and otherwise, these things are still scarce, and the majority of the Muslim community are suffering silently, emotionally, I'm talking.
Let's take a phone call. Here's Fayed in Livingston. You're on WNYC. Fayed, thank you for calling.
Hi, Brian. This is Fayed. Yes, it's a really, really tragedy for the Muslim community, and also it's for the greater, where we're living here. I've been living here for 35 years, and it's such a sad day. My heart really goes out to, all these families, the people, they've been killed. And I'm part of the American Muslim Alliance, and we are trying to bring in the Muslim to integrate in the society, to understand the democracy, to understand how the way of living is. It's one bad apple. Whatever happened to him, we cannot blame the whole Muslim community. And I'm really, really sad to watch and to see how this the person, he was a doctor, and he was also, I think he was a sick man. He did not realize what his action will hurt the whole Muslim world. Muslim Ummah is across the world. 1.2 billion people will be affected with one of his actions.
Fayed, thank you very much. Or is it Syed? I'm sorry, I said Fayed. Tom, from Iraq and Afghanistan veterans, do you want to react to that, and do you think you have any work to do among your members to have them not paint with a broad brush?
Well, I think we have work to do as a country, as to not paint everyone with a broad brush. I mean, the fact that this man was a Muslim is, I think, really irrespective of his crime. He is a criminal. He committed a criminal act. He committed a terrible act. And I find it distasteful that the fact that he is a Muslim is something that we're discussing as part of a conversation. It's an unfortunate reality that people have that are even asking that question. I mean, if he was, if someone made the sign of the cross before they committed a crime, you wouldn't have this conversation of, well, is he a Catholic? It's sort of a false argument, and I think it's something that we have to work on as a country, culturally, because, you know, America does not look like any one thing, and I mean, that's the military does not look like any one thing, and that's something they teach us from day one, and I think that you're going to see that as the military is going to very quickly bounce back and continue its mission.
And military family members, we would love to hear from you about not necessarily the religious angle, but the tragedy itself, no matter who did it, and that feeling of safety when your loved ones in the military are home before they're deployed, being violated here, or anything else you want to say at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 for military personnel and your families as well. Tom, do you think that there is something particularly psychologically stressful about these pre-deployment moments that could trigger such an outburst in somebody who was otherwise unstable? He was a psychiatrist, a military psychiatrist, so, you know, who knows? But is there something else about that, you know, this particular period before deployment of the group that that you want to say?
Well, you know, I would be very hesitant to relate any speculation to this particular case. I mean, I can speak from my own experience. That time before is stressful. Typically, you're working so much, you don't have a lot of time to really reflect. If you're getting ready to deploy, there's a lot of stuff you have to do, and you know, you're working, and you know, that's one thing that the military is very good at, is focusing on the mission, and so there's not a whole lot of time to sit and reflect about how you're feeling. You know, you got a job to do, and you got to do it, and that's basically where it's at.
Ali in East New York, you're on WNYC. Hello, Ali.
How you doing, Brian? And to your guests, and as a Muslim, first and foremost, I'd like to send, you know, my condolences to the families involved, both families, the Muslims and the families of the servicemen. The thing is that, you know, from the Islamic perspective, is that every soul, according to the Quran, is sacred, and no soul should be killed in the, or murdered in any fashion unjustifiably. The other thing is again, we're always reverting back to the fact we're not looking at the situation the way it is, the way it presents itself. It's a human situation. There's a human factor involved in this. There's a person whose mind has snapped. Has nothing to do with his religion. Has to do with the human frailties that exist among human beings. You know, anybody's mind can affect, regardless of nationality. So we have to deal with it in that sense. And I'm glad to hear Tom and Hisham present the case in that light, because that's responsible speech. Most people are trying to make, you know, sensationalize the situation, always trying to say that, you know, this is terrorism. It's just like they say, all Muslims are not terrorists, but all terrorists are Muslim. It doesn't make sense to me. So I'm saying that we have to look the situation in life. We have to find out what the cause of the situation. You know, we all live in this situation together. We've been at war. Okay, you happen to be at war with the Muslims overseas, but you were at war with the Germans and the Italians, except for the Japanese, who had, you know, we shouldn't make that mistake again when you single out a certain group.
Interning all the people.
Hello?
Yes, interning the Japanese,
right,
you mean, in
exactly.
World War II. And so, funny enough, we're later in the hour, we're about to celebrate Japanese culture in the context of Hideki Matsui and the way he plays compared to the American players in Major League Baseball. Ironic.
And we shouldn't make this mistake again. I mean, we've come a long way in this respect, and we should be more mature. Quite naturally, you know, biasness and prejudice starts to set in these circumstances. But let us understand that we're all human. I mean, even the general in the conference had cited the valor of Muslims, you know, in the services. You know, they've served the country, whatever the case is. But the thing is that not to single us out. We have to find the cause. There's a cause in this situation that goes across national and racial line.
And Ali, I'm going to leave it there. We appreciate your call. You know, it's very hard Tom Tarantino from the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, to ever really find the precise cause when somebody snaps like that. What was the precise call of Columbine and the other high school shootings of the 1990s? We've been looking for that ever since, and they've tried to implement anti-bullying programs, things to not let kids feel so isolated in various ways, whatever it may be. I don't know what the military corollary of that is, or if in an individual case, when somebody snaps, you can ever find something that actually applies as a policy. But there's some reporting that Hossam's particular experience as a psychological counselor shook his belief in the war in Afghanistan and Iraq because he saw the psychological effects that was that it was having on troops. Again, you know, we don't really know anything about this guy less than a day after the incident, but there is one thread of reporting along those lines which may turn out or not turn out to be accurate. But what about that effect on a psychological counselor of seeing, you know, the effects on all these vets coming home from wars that a lot of people question?
Yeah, I mean, just speaking generally, and again, you know, I have no idea whether combat stress or any sort of, you know, mental health issues had anything to do with this case. But in general, you know, we do a very good job as a military of training citizens to be warriors. But we do a pretty abysmal job of training them back to being citizens again. I think this is something that the Department of Defense has gotten a lot better at in the last few years with their Centers for Excellence and some of the work of the Centers of Deployment Psychology. They've been doing better at reducing the mental health care stigma. They've been doing better at trying to get soldiers treatment early on, but it's not enough right now. There needs to be more. Fortunately, we were just able to pass mandatory mental health counseling for everybody returning from Iraq and Afghanistan to catch these injuries early. Because we know that right now about a third of veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan are either suffering from post-traumatic stress, traumatic brain injury, major depression, or a combination of the three. And we need to do a better job as a military community and as a society in this country of destigmatizing mental health injuries and promoting treatment, because these are injuries and they're highly treatable.
Can you have traumatic stress even before being deployed?
Well, post-traumatic stress isn't the sole purview of the military service. It exists, and post-traumatic stress disorder is, and it's very important that we mention that it is a diagnosable disorder. It's not something that you can walk in and say, I have post-traumatic stress. There are very clear criteria. But, stress and anxiety are apparent in everyday life. Yes, you can absolutely have it from anything.
Let's get one more caller in here. Tony in Flatbush. Tony, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Leonard.
Brian.
It really grieves me. I'm a veteran, and I have a family member presently serving in the Marine Corps. And one of the things that you really can't appreciate if you've never served is that the military is a very tight-knit group, both members serving and family members who relocate from home states to bases throughout the world, and that camaraderie fosters some protection, some level of security in and amongst the tight-knit group. And when something like this occurs, it's shattering, it's devastating, because as warriors, we know that we can defend our country and we can defend our families, but when a member from the military, for whatever reason, decides to take the lives of those fellow comrades, it's almost as if there's no explanation.
Tony, did you serve with any Muslims in your company, and was there a dynamic around that if you were serving after 9/11?
I did serve with Muslims, but the military is a great organization in that it doesn't allow the individual to promote their personal beliefs. You operate as a unit, so you can have a female, you can have a Muslim, you can have a Jew and a Christian in the same unit, and during downtime we talk about family, we share pictures, but in terms of the mission itself, that social aspect doesn't fit in. And it's sad, because I think in order for members of the military to carry out their mission, they can't allow themselves to be individuals from a social standpoint.
Thank you very much for your call, Tony. And we're going to have to leave it there. And we appreciate everybody who called in, from military families, from Muslim families, a tragedy for both groups as well as for the country as a whole with this unspeakable crime in Fort Hood. Hisham Al-Maliji, local Muslim American leader on Staten Island, and Tom Tarantino, legislative associate at the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, obviously will be following through the day the further revelations about what happened there and how people are doing. Thank you both very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Tom.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up in a minute, another person's Americanness being questioned, the guy who won the New York City Marathon. We'll talk about that.